Welcome to the Race to Rugby World Cup pod with Ron and Adam from the side of the road, somewhere on the planet.
Cool beans. Race to Rugby World Cup pod, part two of our journey through Timor-Leste and Australia.
And so, we haven't moved. We're still at the Walker's house. We're still in Brisbane. Yeah. Still a good day. We just had a good coffee break.
But our journey takes us to day 139, where we arrived into Townsville by train. And it was a day to have one day off. It was actually quite nice. We went into the city and we had a few beers and a chicken palmy at this. It was an Irish pub, but like an establishment, like a really old one.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was called Malloy's, I think, or something similar
Maloney's. Malloy's. It was actually very, you know, just again, like a shock to our system where you see a whole lot of people. And, you know, although we went in the outback for months, it's just always weird when you see like more than 100 people in an area.
Yeah, but this was the first sort of, I guess, you know, the greatest respect to Mount Isa, the biggest city we had seen since Darwin, probably a similar size to Darwin off the top of my head. Coastal city there with there's a big rugby league stadium there, but a lot of big infrastructure, beautiful city actually, a beautiful town along the river, along the coastline there. And we were there, I think it was Friday evening, so it was quite a busy nightlife and we went to go and explore a little bit. And but knowing we still had to, it couldn't be crazy because we had to get back on the bike the next day and start the ride south to Rockhampton.
Yeah, by this time it was three days off the bike for me with proper chemical products.
Inserted correctly.
and we cycled to a place called Home Hill, which was really cool. It was next to the campsite we stayed at was next to like this Olympic-sized swimming pool training area. Cycling in was quite hard. For some reason, the winds went from one direction to the other, straight back into our heads. Yeah. Can you believe it? But I think the highlight of that day is we met Taylor and it was his dad?
I think so, yes.
Two fellow bike cyclists and they were going from Sydney up to Cairns. It was back on the road and back into the adventure of things. And it's always nice meeting fellow cyclists that are bike touring.
Yeah, and they were going at a slightly quicker pace than us. A little bit quicker, but obviously they were going completely opposite directions. So they had the tailwinds and they were taking a month or two to go and explore Queensland.
Yeah, and Taylor actually, he needs to arrive up in Cairns by the 3rd of September. He's doing one of these like cross-country races.
It's a 6,000-kilometer race across Australia. Only four people have entered. It started with eight, and I can't remember the name of the races, but it's one for the bucket list for you ultra-endurance cyclists out there. And Taylor's hoping to do it in a month, which will break the record. So, it's basically averaging 200 k's a day for 30 days. So, you know, we know what a little bit of what he's in store for, and it does make the mind boggle.
Yeah, good luck to him, because that doesn't make me feel happy. But yeah, day 140, we made our way to a campsite in a place called Bowen. It's just past Early Beach, if I'm correct. Early Beach, which is quite well known. We kind of just did the outskirts of Early Beach. We didn't really go in, but you know, if you're looking on a map, that's kind of the sort of environment we were at. I quite enjoyed it. And we cycled into this campsite and the guy cleaning the pool was also a bike tourer. And he's just having time off fixing up his YouTube channel and making a documentary. His name's Greg Orris. He's a famous artist. He does those...
I think it's Gary, isn't it?
Gary Orris.
Gary Orris, yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why I got Greg.
Yeah.
Gary Orris, and he does these like tattoo ink styled art where I'm going to try and describe it. He often has people like lay down on a carpet and then their bodies are inked as the same pattern as the carpet they're laying on. And it's very well known in the tattoo industry and the art industry. He's actually from Berlin where he has a few studios and his art's up. So crazy man, I say crazy for lack of better words.
Crazy in a good way.
Crazy in a good way. He had a lot of stories. He's done seven bike tours.
Yeah.
His bike, he's got a printer attached to his bike. He's got this massive blow up tent. He carries a studio. Like he makes these like on-road studios. He's busy shooting a documentary / film. His bike must be three times the weight of ours, which we'd never thought we would
it was
say.
Possible. Yeah. And he's had some proper, in inverted commas, proper touring bikes. You mentioned the Surly. I think he actually had a Koga in the past. But this bike is number 7th. It's actually from Aldi, which is one of the big department stores here. So effectively like a Walmart or Kmart. He's bought the bike from there, a couple of $100. And as Adam said, he's fitted it out now. He's painted it as a camouflage color. But he's hunkered down for a few months and before he gets back on the bike. But yeah, cool to see people that are, you know, fellow cycling tourists doing it their own way and not our way. But yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, the next morning, day 141, we made our way to Bloomsbury. And so now we were out of the outback, the free campsites and that were more crowded and not so like out there, but they still existed. And we made our way to this one next to a gas station. So online or on the Wikicamps app, you know, it just says there are $4 showers. You can pay $4 and get a shower. There's a place to camp. There's a convenience store next to the gas station. So that's, you know, that's what we aim
It seems
for.
To be a relatively common thing here, I'd say, in inverted commas, that sometimes hotels, restaurants, petrol stations will allow you to camp outside. It's often for truckies. And just for the cost of a couple of bucks for the shower and the ablutions. And I guess their idea, if you're a trucker, you're probably going to fill up there. If you're an RV person, you might use an opportunity to have a meal or a beer or two. So I think that's where they see the revenue streams. But it's cool that they just let you camp behind there. And for a couple of bucks, you can have a shower and a good night's rest.
Yeah, we set up our 2 minute noodle kit, I call it that. We have this like jet boil, heats up water, but we carry gas canisters so then we can heat up our pot full of water and make some noodles. And we could buy some beers from the gas station and just relax there until the sun started setting and then the mosquitoes come out. Usually these areas aren't like looked after in terms of making sure that you have a peaceful sunset seat.
Yeah.
You know, it's right next to the busy road with truck stops. So we had to get refuge straight into the tent and just hide from the mosquitoes. But we had an earlier schnight there. And yeah, day 142, we made our way to Serena via Mackay, which is quite a big town or city. We didn't actually go through it. We went around it, but yeah.
And this is all part of basically the Sunshine Coast, north of Brisbane in Queensland. And as this time, we sort of got the sea on the left-hand side. And there are a lot of famous towns and cities and beach resorts and beach towns servicing the Great Barrier Reef. So the Great Barrier Reef, depending on what, you know, reference you read, is hundreds of kilometers, if not 1,000 kilometers long. It sits offshore on this Queensland coastline. So a lot of this part of the Queensland is revolved around tourism. There's a lot of famous towns there and people have been exploring the beaches and that. So it's it's a popular part of town and a popular part of the country, and also for you know, servicing the farming industry as well. Sugarcane and a little bit different crops that we saw in the outback, but a busy part of the world.
It was busy, and talking about busy, the first place we rocked up to camp, try and camp at, was called it's like Iona or whatever, like, and there was just no one at reception. So we stood around looking at each other like, well, now what? So we actually just said, well, let's go another 20Ks. Bear in mind, that's an hour and a little bit for us at the end of the day, to a place called Serena. We actually cycled into Serena to the first place on Google that says campsite. They were full, and we're like, oh no. And like, these are really small places kind of away from the beach as well. So you think they would have space, but no, it's packed, you know, talking about
this tourism. Is like a random Wednesday afternoon. It's not like it's the middle of peak holiday season.
And then we eventually found a campsite. We're actually camping next to a South African. He was at work, but they said that he was a South African. And we met this family that had been on the road for 3 years. And in fact, so long that they've had a baby whilst being on the road. So they're traveling with their 3 kids. Just another great story of how Australians take their country traveling quite seriously.
Yeah, and look at it as a lifestyle where people genuinely can live on the road. The father had taken a 6-month contract. I think he was a sparky or electrician, was working on a project near this campsite where they'd hold up for 6 months and allowed the newborn baby to settle into the family and life of routine on the road.
Yeah, so it was a special place. Serena, middle of nowhere, met a cool family, enjoyed the camping. Yeah. But what came next was a cycle on day 143 to this place called Clearview. And it was ultimately the first time in Australia we got to cycle next to the seaside. And so we've always been like near edging the ocean and the beaches, and you see the signs and you get that beach feel. But we were now actually on the sand.
Yeah.
And we cycled into this cool Barra Crab campsite on the beach. Literally, you set up your tent as close to the beach as you possibly can. And what a cool spot.
Yeah, brilliant spot. We're a little bit late. The sort of all the prime beachfront locations have been taken, but it really made no difference. We camped under the trees sort of 20 yards back. And again, just, you know, we'll talk about some of the people we met as well there. But yeah, it's got to be one of the most breathtakingly beautiful campsites. And we met it in a few weeks later, or a week or so later, we met some people who were traveling up and asking us for one recommendation. That was straight. We both looked at each other and said, Clearview. And a really, yeah, just a well laid out spot, all the facilities, everything you need there. Just to be able to camp under the trees with the sound of the ocean. And here it's very, very tidal. So I know you went for a swim when we first arrived and woke up the next morning and it was probably a kilometer to actual sea. So you're clambering over these rocks. So very tidal, very beautiful, and a real highlight for us. Yeah.
It was also just really cool to be in that ocean. You feel this like energy. You can see all the various islands just off it. And, you know, if you want to get all hippie about it, you know, the Great Barrier Reef's right there. And it's the largest living organism in the world, essentially. And you can, you know, can get that feeling of this amazing ocean just there. And even in the little shallows where I had to swim in the sea, like you see these small fish that are cruising around and unafraid of any sort of harm to them. So it was an amazing time to get there. And yeah, just ahead of us, we met the South African couple who welcomed us with Kam de Bokke. So we went and had a conversation with them, and we actually ended up spending the whole evening with them talking about South Africa. And
you know, they immigrated maybe 20 years, a long time ago. I can't remember exactly how long, but made life for themselves in Australia, and they were now doing fulfilling a lifelong dream of actually traveling around Oz as well. So they were well into their trip and had three dogs. And properly organized. And yeah, really just cool to see South Africans that have come over here, made a good life for themselves and enjoying the fruits of their labor and some shared experiences from home, and them just giving a bit of insight into their life and the challenges and opportunities and the success that they've made of it. And really, really cool to spend the evening with them.
We had a braai. So for anyone else out of South Africa, it's a barbecue. It's a brand new caravan that they had, so we're testing out all of the cool little features that they had, and they had a gas cooker in the front, and he made us some sausages and meat, and it was just amazing. So very cool, and what was even just as cool, the next morning, we saw this, as we were getting ready to leave, we saw this van that was stickered up with Run 222, and the Lockie and Courtney were the owners of that, and Lockie was being running from
Hobart
to Cairns to raise awareness for mental health, and it's running 22 kilometers a day, or half a marathon a day for 222 days.
Yeah, and I don't think he was saying that he doesn't think anybody's ever run from. So Hobart, which is a little island state off the south of Australia, the southeast corner, Tasmania, but Hobart, the capital, to Cairns up in northern Queensland. He thinks he's the first person to run it, and he said it doesn't really matter if he is or isn't. It's a pretty crazy adventure. So 4,500 or 5,000 kilometers. So 222 times 22, you'll pretty much get the idea of what he's doing. And they were about 3/4 of the way through it at that stage.
Day 186 or something.
Yeah,
like
so maybe 3/4, maybe 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah,
and just so cool to be able to. He's in his early 40s, had a high-flying corporate job in Sydney, and decided to pack it in to go and do something which, you know, is important to him. He talked a bit about some of the mental health challenges that he's faced in his life, and he wanted to give something back in that space and try and contribute how best he could. And he was and again, he hadn't been that fit when he started. He'd done, you know, obviously in his past, he'd been a bit of an athlete, but started his journey. And again, in the same way that we just ride 100 kilometers a day, and you know, you do it for 2 weeks and 3 weeks, and a month later, you've crossed the continent. People said to him, "How are you ever going to do that?" And the same sort of attitude. He just runs 22 Ks every day, wakes up next morning, does it again, wakes up next morning, does it again. And Courtney there in the support vehicle, he's got his back and helps with the logistics and the planning. And there were some tough challenges. I mean, his feet were a wreck.
He's lost all of his nails.
Lost all of the nails in his feet. And he had some pelvic issues early on, but he just pushed through it and the body's adapted. And again, the same way we talk about all the time, the body's an incredible thing. But it all starts up top with the mind.
Yeah. And just before he left, he recommended that we head to, we were going to go to Marlborough. But he's told us just around the corner, across the tracks, it's like 2 km away from the caravan park, there's a hotel where the guy lets you stay at the back for $5. It's like, trust me, go there. It's just really nice. And, you know, we like, oh, of course, you know, take your recommendation. And we got in there. It was actually a long day of cycling. It was only 95 kilometers, but we left quite late. And
yeah, we were just a lazy start.
Yeah, it was a lazy start. But getting in there, we were just exhausted. And I walk in there, you know, as we pull in and just to see what the deal is, where do we park? And the barman was like, are you Adam and Ron on your bicycles? And I'm like, oh, yeah, how do you know that? And he's like, no, Lockie called ahead and he spotted you $100 on the bill. So enjoy some beers and a meal on him and the campsite and so on. So thank you.
Oh, what an amazing human being. I mean, there he is on his own trip. He's, you know, struggled hard to get his sponsors. It's lined up and, you know, he's there out there raising money for his charity. But, you know, in the same way that we were completely blown away about his trip, I think obviously the reverse was true. And, you know, understanding the sort of things that I guess we would need on the road, his generosity was amazing, you know. And what an amazing little hotel and pub. He, you know, his recommendation was just could not have been better. A campsite full of cool people. We met Peter. Mm-hmm. Who's of Swedish heritage, but very, very Australian, works in the mines out there. He was camping. He was going on a boys' trip the next day, 4 or 5 day trip fishing. So we had a few beers with him. Very, very, very memorable evening. It would have been memorable anyway, but the generosity of Lockie just made it that much more special.
Yeah, what a legend. And Lockie, if you're listening, we used the full $100. and then day 145, another milestone that was on our list for a long time. Although we went via Townsville to get here, we were going to cycle 98 kilometers into Rockhampton. One, because it was actually just a cool milestone or place to get to. But two, I have a long lost second or third cousin or something like that, Greg. I'm not sure. We actually didn't really discuss it. But Greg Holloway is my family member and he's been living in Rockhampton for 25 years or more. Last time I saw him was when I was 12 years old. And him and Marina were going to host us at their house in Rockies. So we made it there. We're going to take a day off on the Saturday. And when we rocked up there, he invited his 4 or 5 close mates that are all massive cycling enthusiasts and rugby fans. And we just spent the evening having – it was actually a lads' night because Marina went to Brisbane to visit her daughters. We just had an awesome, awesome evening just talking about cycling, rugby and – various other stories from around the world. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. It's so generous of Greg to sort of invite us, you know, into his community. And him and Rita really have got an awesome group of mates there. This group of people walk every day up this hill, which they took us up the following evening for some sundowners. It's a very, very significant hill/mountain.
Yeah.
So it's good to see people staying healthy, staying fit. And there's a really tight community there. And I must say, I left Rockhampton thinking, my goodness, of all the places I've seen in Australia, this is a great sized city. There seems to be a great vibe. It's on the coast. Mm. If you don't live on the floodplain, you're not going to avoid any potential flooding. But it really, I just was taken aback by the place. Really, really nice spot.
Yeah, we had a good time at the beef capital of Australia. We did visit the grammar school there where we met the captain of the rugby union and rugby league team.
Girls team.
And we had Channel 7 News come visit us just to share our story. It was, incredible. We've met some unbelievable women along the way that are big fans of rugby union and rugby league and have no bias in their head that rugby should be a more physical, manly sport. It's a sport for all. And it was just an incredible morning. It wasn't long, but loved meeting.
No, she was very, very inspiring, and thanks to Jonathan Sweets, and he's doing some PR for Child Fund, and he set it up there. And it's just, you know, we've been on this journey. We've met rugby communities every country we've been to. We've met people playing the highest level of the game. We've met the most grassroots programs. We've met the Child Fund teams in Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia. Vietnam and Cambodia and Timor Leste. We spent time with the with grassroots rugby in all these countries, and we've seen in Singapore. And it's amazing. We talk a lot about role models, and in Child Fund rugby, the coaches are the role models, and they're teaching these young girls and boys life skills and life lessons and rugby skills. And these young people look up to these coaches as mentors and as leaders in their community. And you speak to, I've actually forgotten her name. I'm so embarrassed.
No, I know.
It's Ilana. Something similar to Ilana. 17 years old. She actually plays for the Queensland women's team. So she's the youngest player in the Queensland women's rugby union team. She's clearly a very good athlete. She's very competent. She spoke on camera incredibly well. And she spoke about the importance of having the Wallaroos, the women's Australian rugby team, having them as role models and mentors for her. And she was very open about the fact that her dream is to play for the Wallaroos. The Rugby World Cup is coming to Australia in 2029, the Women's World Cup. The Men's World Cup is here in 2027. So she's got a clear path in her mind what she can achieve. But first of all, it's 2025, and she's 17 years old. That's going to be in 3 years' time. She'll be 20. And I think she's a bit of a gun. So Wallaroo, whoever's playing halfback for the Wallaroos, you better look out. someone's got their sights on your number nine jersey.
So with a nice deserved day off, we cycled 114 kilometers, and we had a lot of opinions of where we should go and stay from Greg's mates and everyone around there. But we stumbled across this campsite, I think one of my favorite, in the middle of nowhere again. But you kind of go off the Bruce Highway, you cross this river, and there's just hundreds of people camping along this river. It was a Sunday, but wonderful sunset, people fishing. It's calm and cool. Everyone's pulling in there, massive trees, shaded. And yeah, we got to hang out at this campsite. Literally don't know what it was called, but you know, it wasn't where we were planning on staying, but we just decided this is where we're setting up for the night.
It was a good day. It started off with actually just shout back to Marcus, who was one of Greg's mates, who joined us on the way out of Rockhampton and showed us a nice nice quiet way out of town. And we cycled along the river where he showed us the sort of the flood levels that had been recorded over the years. They're pretty scary. I mean, Adam, you stood next to the flood level and the highest was taller than you. But along that river, there's all these old buildings that are sort of, as I say, it's the beef capital of Australia. There's a lot of it. It used to be a big port town where the tugs used to, the boats used to come up the river. And so it's a very significant town in the 1800s. It's the longest strip of heritage protected buildings in the country, but also interspersed a lot of little cafes and nice apartment blocks. So once again, you know, for me, I think really hit home what a livable city it was. But anyway, point being, shout out to Marcus for leading us out for what was which ended, as you say, for a very memorable day.
Well, actually, then halfway through the trip, so every day Ron and I, we cycle across maybe 10, 20 different creeks. And a creek, I don't know if for anyone listening, it's like basically a river crossing, but like a smaller river. And everyone always asks us, like, but on the highway, do you really see much? And, you know, it's hard to explain, but when you're on a bicycle, you have different sights and smells and things perspectives that you see. So we always lean over, and whether there's animals in the creek or not, it's always like one's clear, one's muddy, one's been messed up with trucks, one is untouched. You always have a look, and over, it was called Hut Creek, cycling there. And bear in mind, before we left, a platypus is one of my favorite animals from a cartoon show I watched when I was young. Obviously, coming from Africa, you don't see them. And they're really actually impossible to find in the wild. And then in there, every time we look over, we just try and see what we've spotted. We've seen.
I think we're looking for crocodiles, to be honest.
Yeah, we've been trying to look for crocs the most.
We thought if we're going to see anything, we thought that would be it, what we would see.
Yeah, closer to Darwin, I saw a little whippersnapper, like a small croc. Ron spotted a ray. We've often seen a little fish and a lot of birds. But at this point, there was this platypus chilling there, very shy. So as we kind of get close, it just jumped away. The energy I got when I saw that thing, I was just so stoked. So that was a big highlight. Not many people get to see those in the wild. And we're very stoked for that. And
that might explain a future tattoo.
and we got into that campsite and just ended off the evening with some drinks with fellow campers that were just so welcoming and awesome. So what a great day out of Rockies. The next day we committed to a big day. Ultimately, we had goals to get to Brisbane on a certain date. So one out of the few days leading into Brisbane, we had to really put foot, and we made our way to Lake Mandarin. Okay. It was 4 kilometers off the main road. So it was 150 kilometers to get there.
Yeah.
But I want to just mention the one highlight of that day was talking about animals, was when we turned off, as it gets darker, you see hundreds of kangaroos and wallabies, and I don't know the difference between the two are, but I saw this must have been 5 foot, six foot red kangaroo just having a little hop around. So that was also really cool. And then outside of that,
and I was a little bit behind you, and coming down the same stretch on the other side of the road, as it turns out, I saw my first little kangaroo with a baby in the pouch.
Oh yeah, I'm actually like Joey, very jealous about that,
which was very, very cool. Facing the river, facing the road. For me, that's sort of burnt in my memory.
Yeah,
so you get the platypus, I get the Joey.
I know. I mean, it's very rare to see those things, and you know, we've chatted to so many Australians on the route. None of them have seen koala bears and platypuses and Joeys and so on. So, you know, Ron and I are just slowly but surely pedaling away. We've seen these cool things, and yeah, we got into that campsite. Very nice. You know, I think people spend a lot of time there. Big lawns. It's next to this massive lake. It had great ablution blocks and a kitchen area where we just enjoyed our meals, and I took a deep breath after a long day of cycling. We got in late. You know,
yeah, it was dark by the time we got in.
Yeah,
but also just, I think it sort of highlighted, as we camped there, I mean, beautiful lawn, and we just made, you know, Adam had arrived a bit earlier than me, and the office was closed and everything was closed. So we just decided to find a place to pitch our tent. And, pretty chilly evening, but also just to, you know, in the outback, it was chilly but dry, and we didn't even bother with a fly sheet. But here, we learned pretty quickly you've got to have a fly sheet, because you wake up in the morning and you're not sure whether it's rained or anything, but everything is just absolutely sodden with dew. So you have that sort of morning routine of trying to shake off the water by just packing your – that's a good point. We need to unpack the tent and try not get it too moldy.
Yeah. And so the next day, we day 149, we did 131 kilometers into Maryborough. We – originally, we're planning to go to a place just north of Childers, and when we got there, it was about 2 p.m., and Ron and I both – well, Ron made the suggestion, you know, like, well, still got daylight. Let's maybe do extra kilometers, so then our ride into Gympie will be less and we can sort out some admin.
Yeah.
We did that, and what an adventure. Like, we did stick to the main road, and because of that, I also called up a Warm Showers potential host, Robert Proudfoot.
This is just 2 or 3 hours before we plan on getting to Maryborough.
Yeah, and he answered, and he was happy to host us. So we had a place to stay. We knew we were going to get there in the dark. And actually, as we were going in, there's just so much roadworks at the moment on the Bruce Highway. And shoulders, you know, I think Australian safety, they like blocked off a little bit more than they need to be. But there's almost nowhere to ride. And especially when the sun's setting, you're basically in the middle of the highway on a bicycle with big trucks and cars coming back and forth. Although you'd feel quite safe riding on the stretch of roadworks that they're fixing up, which is – it is gravel, but it's more than – but you could not allow it to. And this guy, Josh, he pulls up in his ute. Firstly, he's like, what are you guys doing? Like almost like
– just to be clear, he's working on the site. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a construction engineer or something like that, and almost thought we were going to get in trouble. And then when I said, no, we've been cycling from Darwin, he lost his mind. He's like, what? Well, actually, we've been cycling from Tokyo. What? He just kept coming back every kilometer, just like, guys, what? Like, he's just trying to work it all out. And eventually, he wanted to, like,
follow
us in and deviate traffic away, because it was getting dark into Maryborough. And we had 5 kilometers to the off-ramp. We actually ended up just loading the bike onto his ute, just off to the off-ramp. And what a legend. He didn't, you know, had no reason to help us out. Yeah. And he just loved our story. He took us to the off-ramp. We did extra 5 kilometers through Maryborough just to make it up. But safety first in Australia.
What an absolute champion. And I think we made a bit of an impact on him, and he was super helpful. The huge ride did cost you your flags, though. So that is
My flags blew off.
That was a small price to pay for the help that he gave us. And then, a nice evening with Robert and his son at their home in Maryborough. And as I say, the Warm Showers and cycling touring community once again coming up trumps. And just,
what an incredible man. And he's going through a lot. So shout out to him and his tough year. And, you know, we're thinking about you and just, people have tough times, and he didn't push us away. He welcomed us into the home. And I personally think Ron and I gave him a bit of energy to get through. You know, his house got wrecked by the recent floods, and, he's got a whole lot of
car accident. Yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah. Tough for him. So, thanks, Robert. Really appreciate it. Because we woke up with full excitement on day 150, and we were going to cycle only 85 kilometers to Gympie. And why is this significant?
Well, for a long time, this has been a date in the diary. Arriving in Brisbane by a certain date has been important to us because four or five of my old school and university friends who all live in Brisbane, or in fact, Dean lives up in north of Cairns or near Cairns, committed to coming to join us for a couple of days. So shout out to Sam and Craig and Dina and Lofty, who all took 2 days off work on the Thursday and Friday. And we're coming out to Gympie to meet us. So Dean flew down from Cairns into Brisbane. The boys picked him up from the airport and they drove through and met us at the East Motor Inn, just off the Bruce Highway outside of Gympie. And that was the beginning of a very memorable few days.
Yeah, it's always nice when you have people join you, but especially when they're joining you on bicycles.
Yeah.
So, you know, they feel the pain and the excitement and the highs and lows of what we go through every day.
It's only right for people to really understand what it's like.
It was incredible. Yeah. That first day was one of my top 10 favorite days. We cycled into the Sunshine Coast and through Noosa Heads, and our goal was to get to Caloundra, where Greg had a holiday home on the beach there. But what incredible scenes. It was clear skies, bit of wind yarrow there, but our bags were actually in the support vehicle in the back. So, you know, Ron and I felt a bit lighter.
We lost 40 kilograms overnight.
Yeah, and just so much fun. We had an unbelievable lunch. It was Noosa Heads, right?
We're just going back. I mean, to go back the day before, Adam and I arrived in mid-afternoon and sort of, you know, got ourselves mentally prepared for the couple of days ahead, and then the boys arrived about 5 o'clock, unpacked the bags, straight to the local Phoenix Hotel pub, where we enjoyed some festivities these mates, some of them I haven't seen in 10, 15 years, and it was like it was yesterday. And so a really, really fun evening, and that sort of set the tone for the ride. So it was just really good banter and chis.
Yeah, so much banter.
And then, as you say, we went to the – I can't remember which surf club it was, but it was along the Sunshine Coast. And a lot of these surf clubs in Australia have become real destination venues, generally well-priced. They've got the most prime location you can possibly imagine along the coast of the country. A lot of them have become very flash, if you want, you know, nice – big bars with a whole lot of craft beers and different drinks and fancy restaurants and pokey machines. But it's all very, very reasonably priced and a very memorable first main meal of the trip.
Yeah, good meals. I think that's the one thing that they didn't experience was that we were eating quite nicely. we made our way to Caloundra. We had a great taco. It was a taco Thursday night whatever night it was. But what a memorable
swim in the ocean.
Swim in the ocean And what was cool is the next day was full of rain.
Yeah.
And so we were just telling them, well, now you've got what Ron and I go through on a daily wrapped up into 2 days. You've got the nice weather, the great meals, and now you've got some rain. And
the only thing I didn't experience was 2 minute noodles and baked beans.
Yeah, exactly. And that day 152, that was the day we were going to cycle into Brisbane. We had a destination to reach, which was the rugby club, the Bullsharks Junior Rugby Club.
In Graceville, Queensland, Brisbane.
Brisbane, and some rain, and there was no complaints. The banter just kept us going. Yeah. Got a little bit wet here or there, but it was fun, and everyone cycled
the whole day. I mean, Lofty, he sort of had looked forward to this for a long time, had a bit of a bad head cold, so he volunteered to drive for the day, and that meant the other three had no excuses to sort of rotate out for 20, 30 Ks. As you say, like it was a bit of a drizzly, wet start, but boys just were straight into the thing. This is not a day to complain or to jump in the car, and some really good chis. And it was very cool that the last 10K, as we came into the town, as we came into Brisbane City itself, Terry Hansen, a local radio personality and comedian, and actually turns out to be cousins with Margaret Sheenan, who's the CEO of Child Fund. He came out to meet us, and what a character he was, and he certainly brought some different energy in his bright green Child Fund shirt. And and he's on a bit of a personal mission himself. He's lost 15 kilograms in the last 15 weeks. He's got another 10 kilograms and 10 weeks to go, and he's just putting himself through all these sort of physical challenges and doing a whole lot of stuff for different charities at the moment and again it's part of his journey. From, he said he had some dark times a few years ago, and he's now sort of turned that around, and it's just great to spend some time with him. And a guy who's super passionate about Child Fund, and there's a great opportunity for us to just to talk a little bit more about the program.
Yeah, it was incredible. And you know, coming from South Africa, you don't have a lot of cities that are bike friendly, and Brisbane has obviously gone through a sustainable transformation over the many years, and for 10Ks you're on a bike path completely away from traffic. It's just amazing. Yeah. And I just really enjoyed it. It was drizzly, it was getting late.
It's along the Brisbane, a lot of us, like this, almost like a man-made, well, it is a man-made promenade along the Brisbane River.
Yeah.
It gets you off the roads. People are out there, even the drizzle, people in the evening, people are out there running and cycling. And it's just, yeah, it just creates such a good energy for the city. It just makes the city so livable.
Oh, it's incredible. I was actually, I've been researching the city since we've been here. I even think they up there to be hosts of an Olympic game soon.
We are hosting Olympics, yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah. So, what a great place. I love Brisbane. And we got into the rugby club. So cool, like little kids just playing rugby as you arrive. And it's like,
From like three or four, there's a, like they're puppies. Yeah. So it's the Bull Sharks puppies.
Yeah. And there's a women's team, little girls team actually. And what a great.
Yeah. So Greg's three boys were all out there training. Greg's one of the volunteer coaches. Sam's kids, they don't play rugby, but they play football or soccer. They came out to kick a ball around, and just there's a really good community vibe there. There's the sausage sizzle, which is like a bit of an Australian institution. People selling burgers and hot dogs there to raise a bit of money for the club, and there's a bar there that sells reasonably priced drinks, and it's a really good Friday afternoon, Friday evening out.
Yeah, and we were quite tired. It was funny. We all just went straight to bed after that, and we had the day off on the Saturday, and although we've had a day off in Rockies and Townsville, but this was the first time we would can just take a deep breath.
Yeah, and effectively it's going to be 2 weeks off the bike. We're in, we're day three of it now, day four of it now. Mm. So Saturday morning, woke up and going, what do we have to do? Not cycle.
Yeah.
Woke up to a beautiful winter's day here in Brisbane. The rain had disappeared. Massive shout out to Kath and Sam and their kids. Holly, George, and Livy, who've welcomed us into their home and made us feel very, very welcome and spoiled us rotten. You gave you an opportunity to go and wander around and see a bit of Brisbane. And
I watched an AFL game, a reserves team for the Magpies. I watched a first team rugby game, the BBC versus TSS. And then we had another barbecue/braai, however you want to label it. Yeah. It's even crazier because we never really have back-to-back days off. Yeah. So then you're thinking, the next day we're going to start. Nope.
Yeah. And it was just so the Walkers obviously organized the barbecue at their house, and it was pretty much the crew and the wives and the kids from the crew that had ridden with us from Gympie. But another old school friend of mine, David Burrows, I was at school with him from probably 9 years of age to 18. We must have played hundreds of rugby games together. He was always my scrum half. I think I've seen him once since school, and certainly not in 15 years. So it was a great reunion from that point of view. And already he's been a relatively successful radiologist down in Melbourne, and him and his family decided they want a change of lifestyle. So they've moved up to Brisbane. He's taken a sort of a 6 month sort of self-imposed sabbatical, and the family is going to go back to South Africa for the first time in a long time for a few months at the end of September. But I didn't realize I was talking about our plans of going to Fiji. And it turns out that he does a lot of volunteer work remotely as a doctor in Fiji. So he's got there's a group of doctors there who've got some rudimentary facilities and X-ray machines and that, and they'll often send the X-rays to him on WhatsApp or email, and he'll then, with no cost, do whatever radiologists do with X-rays and sort of analyze them. It was a cool connection, and he's connected us with one of the mates that he does work with, a Fijian. So we're looking forward to meeting him. So again, this trip's just been unexpected surprise after unexpected surprise.
One big surprise, although it was set up, but we went and met the Wallaroos on Sunday. And the Wallaroos are obviously the women's rugby team. And they had a training camp in
down the Gold Coast at Bond Uni,
as they prepare for the O'Reilly's Cup against the Black Ferns. And what a cool experience. Like, we just, I guess maybe we are better than what we, but we're just two random cyclists, and we go and hang out at the training camp with the Wallaroos.
Yeah, and it was Sunday morning after a long barbecue, woke up at 5 o'clock to drive down, thanks to Kath O'Connor for the loan of the car. So we got up early, very, very misty morning in Brisbane, for the sort of hour and a bit drive down to the Gold Coast. I met with Jonathan, who again, the guy, sort of the PR man for Child Fund, who set up a live Sunday morning news broadcast recording with Emily Chancellor, who is one of the key players for the Wallaroos, which is the ladies' Australian rugby team. But very importantly, she's an ambassador for Child Fund Rugby. So she's actually gone out to Laos to visit the program there before. it's pretty obvious that she's super, super passionate about the program. It made quite an impact on her, that visit. So it was nice to spend some time with somebody who'd actually visited the program as Adam and I had. And so I think from memory, that's our first live news that we've done, sort of prime time Sunday morning news bulletin crossover, which is
Southeast Asia Today live?
Could be
Indonesia.
Yes. Good point. So anyway, sorry, we're getting a bit spoiled here. You know, just anyway,
live broadcast, live TV after this.
Yeah. Anyway, so I know there's a lot of excitement in the Walker household and the Hubbard household for the kids to wake up and see their friends on live on TV. And then we got to old friend of mine, Paul Douglas, who lives down on the Gold Coast now. He came and joined us for breakfast at the hotel. And then the highlight, as you say, was then going off to Bond Uni. I think a bit guilty of taking things for granted on this trip. Like, we get all these crazy experiences. And here we are, the Wallaroos have actually invited us to their training camp to go and spend an hour or two with the ladies in preparation for massive two test series against the Black Ferns. So, really, really humbled that they invited us out there. Beautiful day on the Gold Coast, and watching them in training, and this is now peak training, working hard, double session, and the effort and the number of support team and the resources and just everything that's going into making these Wallaroos is the best team that they possibly can be. It's pretty inspiring. And it's even in Australia, you know, where women's rugby has been much higher profile than it has in South Africa for a long time, it's, you know, they're still putting more and more effort and energy into giving, not just giving the Wallaroos the best chance of success, but also using that as a platform to inspire other girls to play rugby. And it's apparently in Australia, it's just growing exponentially, women's involvement in rugby union. And again, you can see the benefits of the investment in the top of the game, because it really does filter down to the lower things. And what a great bunch of ladies.
Yeah.
They were so pumped to see the rugby ball that they're going to be using in New Zealand in 55 days time. So pumped to see the whistle. And I think for them, it really gave them a tangible taste of what they were aiming for.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy in theory to think about it, but to see two guys on the same journey, well, you know, a journey to the same destination and a little bit of tangibility through the whistle on the board, was cool to see them enjoying it and appreciating it.
Yeah, it was incredible. I really enjoyed it. These ladies are inspiring, and you know, they're at the forefront of making this game even bigger than what it is. So well done to them. Yeah. We ended off the day on a high with the Wallaroos. We went in, enjoyed a sunset beer and pizza with some friends at Felon's or something, Brewing Company on the river, and ended off one of the most amazing weekends in Brisbane you could think of.
Oh, so just what absolute buzz. Again, some old rugby mates from our time in Asia came out to join us for a couple of drinks on the Brizzy River on a Sunday evening. Absolutely buzzing. People are out and about and just enjoying the winter sun. And really, it's just we're looking forward to Brisbane. I think it's massively over-delivered. And to think we've still got another, you know, couple of days now before we go to Fiji, and a couple of days when we get back from Fiji to enjoy it. We feel like we're now really in the heart of rugby union country here in Australia before we get down to the equivalent in New South Wales. Tomorrow off to Fiji. How excited are you for that?
It's been a highlight. I think Dan Nicol asked me which one of my favorite destinations to reach when we left in Jan on our prologue, and Fiji was on the list. And, you know, there was a time where the islands might not have been a realistic destination on this journey.
Because of COVID.
And so, we've unfortunately had to say goodbye to Samoa and Tonga because of those reasons. But thank goodness Fiji is a realistic opportunity to get there, and we're going to get there super, super stoked. And, you know, I think we talk about highlights, Vietnam and Cambodia. We had highlights of hanging out with the Child Fund programs, and there's a partner program in Fiji. So the excitement of Fiji before I left was more just Fiji the destination. Now it's actually just to go and hang out with these children and just see what all the money we're raising, what it goes towards, and how – you know, how awesome the program is. Very excited.
Yeah, and also we've got an office visit planned with DHL on Friday. So it'll be nice to get back into the swing of things with them. And, you know, Fiji is obviously a really, really significant rugby country. Sevens is what it's known for traditionally, but every time they go to the World Cup, they exceed expectations. They always cause a shock or two. And we're hopefully, who knows, we've been lucky enough to spend some time with some of the Springbok ladies. We got to spend some time with the Sakura team in Japan. We got to spend some time with the Wallaroos. So really hoping we get to spend some time with the Fiji ladies before they, you know, during the, for their preparations for the World Cup starting in 50-something days' time. So really looking forward to it. We're not taking our bicycles. It's sort of off. It's far enough off the route. We feel like we can just leave the bikes alone. But to go and explore Fiji, it's a country neither of us have been to. But it's, as you say, similar to you, I've always wanted to go there. So really, really looking forward to it. And again, as we get closer and closer to Auckland now, as it's closer, closer and closer to New Zealand, and having, again, it helps having spent time with the Wallaroos, but you can really feel the buzz in the air now around. We're in a proper rugby country now. Fiji, another one. The build-up to the World Cup is real. We've got another call this afternoon with the Child Fund team. Some exciting stuff on the horizon with what's planned in New Zealand. And yeah, big push for us now on the fundraising side of things. Child Fund Rugby, racetorugbyworldcup.com. Please donate if you can. We really want to do a big push on the fundraising side of things. In the meantime, we're going to do whatever we can, whether it's media and, you know, appearances and whatever small way we can to help raise their profile and the profile of their involvement in the World Cup.
Cannot wait. And, you know, we'll try and chat to you when we get to Sydney.
Yeah.
That will be about 2 weeks from now. And yeah, head down when we're on the bike and hands up when we're around the charity. Yeah. And we are, yeah, we're just so pumped. And thanks so much for the support and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you everybody who's listened to this and just supports us everywhere possible. It is more appreciated than you can ever imagine. Over and out.